Homophobia number 14. I'm Alan.
And I'm Mark.
And we're here to talk a little bit about tech and a lot about entertainment today.
Oh, yes.
And this is what we got for you. So how was your week this week there, sir?
Again, another really quick week at work, but ended up again at the brake shop getting my... I was supposed to get an alignment done on my car. And unfortunately, their alignment machine was busted, broken, boasted, you know. So I was also having some problems with stalling because I had gotten my throttle body fixed a little while back. And in fixing it this time, it is a hell of a lot worse. So now I'm currently in a rental car, a beautiful Chrysler 300.
It has nice seats, I must say.
Yes, with the heated seats, leather seats, but you don't like the imitation wood grain.
Oh, that's ugly. What were they thinking?
I don't know.
That's brutal. Why not throw some fucking wood panels on the side and just call it a complete UGG fest?
I've got a station wagon. And what was that? Woody? That's surf song.
Haven't got a clue. I have not got a clue.
How about your week, sir?
It was the absolute fucking shits, and that's where I'm leaving it. It was, I had a brutal work at week, and the sooner I can forget about it, the better.
Speaking of shits, KFC for supper last night.
Okay, and end of that topic. I was thinking, though, I thought about it a couple days ago, and then I saw something again today that made me think to ask you. I forget which episode it was exactly. You were talking about the Michael Moore documentary and
Slacker Nation.
Yeah, so did you ever get around to downloading it?
I did not.
So I can safely say that you have not seen it then.
I have not seen it.
You know what? And I don't think I have not heard of anybody that has.
I've seen people actually download it online and mention that they've downloaded, but
I've heard absolutely no kind of reviews or comments or anything about it. I don't know. It's kind of funny that in this really, really political climate right now that Michael Moore doesn't really have a voice.
He's very silent. Yeah, I'm surprised at that as well. Until you brought it up just now, it hadn't even crossed my mind. It's like, wow, he's quiet. That is not Michael Moore.
Yeah. There's also... Oh, and speaking of the election, it's Tuesday.
Yeah, all you Americans out there, get out and vote.
Yeah. Think, hope, change, whatever the hell it is that your candidate is using as the buzzword. But, you know, it's after 8 years of Bush, I'm sorry, but even those of you in that camp have got to be at the point where you're ready for something different. So,
and if you go into Starbucks after you vote, you can just tell them that you voted, and they will give you a free tall coffee.
Well, most cities have how many Starbucks?
A bajillion.
So polls are open from, what, 8 to 8? Hmm? You could hit about 30 Starbucks, and you'll be on a caffeine buzz till Friday. First off, this is our one and only tech story of the week here. Really hasn't been a lot happening tech-wise and stuff like that, but this actually kind of came through on Friday, and I thought this was, like, sweet. Computer World, it was reported on Computer World that subnotes like the Asus EPC and the Dell Mini 9, the HP 2133 Mini Note, will soon cost as little as $99. The catch? You'll need to commit to a 2-year mobile broadband contract. The low cost will come courtesy of subsidy identical to the one you already get with your cell phones. The Wall Street Journal reported yesterday that HP is already talking to carriers about such an arrangement, but didn't say which carriers. And you can bet that if HP is talking to carriers, then so are the likes of Dell and Asus. AT&T also announced a major strategic shift a couple weeks ago that should result in AT&T stores selling non-phone gadgets that take advantage of mobile broadband, including netbooks. I think this is so fucking awesome.
Yeah, but will this be on top of your already 2 and 3 year contracts that you've already got with your cell phone?
Well, it's hard to say if it's going to be separate or in tandem with. I imagine what it's going to be is like a data package, right?
Yeah.
You'll get your notebook and you'll get those little USB sticky ends for the notebook for the all over G3 or whatever your carrier has out there.
Yeah, that could work for me too. I like that. But
I love the idea of internet anywhere. Imagine having a little 9-inch notebook that you can throw in your backpack and go all over, and whenever you need to have access to whatever, pop that baby open and you're good to go.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be a godsend. Like, I have a hard time living out without my internet for too long. And I think I really do like this idea. You know, something that if I'm sitting in the car and, you know, if I go to a store and I'm looking for something and they don't have it, get back in the car, pop open the laptop, look who else has it, what price it's going to be. Mm-hmm. I
know even with some of the websites around here, you can actually check to see which stores have it in stock.
Yeah.
Like on our Future Shop website. I was actually just talking to my mom about this summer about getting a card or a USB stick that was like cell enabled so that we could access the internet from our cottage. But I checked the coverage of our local carriers and it doesn't even come close to where our cottage is.
Yeah, but it's expanding more and more all the time. They're rolling it out. I think that, you know, the release of the iPhone and now with the G1 is sort of forcing carriers to expand their data networks. And I mean, think of it too, that I mean, if you have a Linux based or even an XP based subnote that you can carry around with you wherever, you can even put a VPN on there and call home to your home computer and do whatever you need doing on there.
Yeah.
Like if you have Windows, like so you have Office applications or something like that on your home computer, you can work on them from wherever. I love this idea. I love this idea. If you have Skype on there, free phone calls anywhere you're at, you know, it's just not free, but you know, as good as, but, I think this is a brilliant idea. I am very excited about this and I really do hope to see it in the next year or two.
And I hope that the prices aren't astronomical. What that they don't bend you over the table and don't use lube.
What would you pay for a service like this?
For a data package, as well as my cell phone as well. I already pay about $120 a month for my cell. And that's with like a really small data package. I wouldn't need a lot of data for what I would use it for. So I'd probably get like the smallest data package. Because I'm only going to be checking emails and doing messaging with it. And some basic like web page searches and stuff. So maybe $50 a month.
That's kind of where I'm thinking too. You know, if it's in that $50 to $60 range, and you're getting a $99, you know, sub note. And I mean, like we've both got laptops and everything too. I mean, if it's just a data stick, well, we can plug that right into your existing hardware and have the same kind of access.
Yes, that would be, that makes it even better because sometimes I like a little bit more power than these little netbooks would supply. Yeah,
but with a VPN client on your little subnote that you're taking, you can call home to your computer and do your more powerful applications through it. I don't know. Ever since I read this, I was like, oh, and I could do this and I could do that. I'm excited about this. I really am. I think this is going to be a very, very cool move from the carriers.
Hope so. Hope they don't fuck it up.
Yeah, you can almost rely on them to do that now, can't you? All onto a bit of entertainment stories here. First up is Robert Downey Jr. has signed on for The Avengers and Iron Man 2. Marvel set out a press release officially announcing not only Jon Favreau's involvement as director on Iron Man 2 and executive producer on The Avengers, but also that part of his four-picture deal, Robert Downey Jr. will indeed reprise the role of Tony Stark, a.k.a. the Iron Man, for both Iron Man 2 in 2010 and The Avengers in 2011.
That is awesome. The first time I heard that Robert Downey Jr. was being cast as Tony Stark, I was thinking, what brilliant friggin' casting that was. And he's such a great actor going into this right here. It can only be a good movie. So I'm hoping that, again, they don't fuck it up. And Jon Favreau, I like his directing style too. So
yeah, I think Marvel's really putting a lot of faith into this. You know, 2011, that's still what, 3 years away?
Yeah.
You know, the whole comic book trend could very well have
petered out by then, you think?
Yeah, it's possible. It's highly unlikely.
Yeah, I don't think so, because it is such a huge mine to, well, mine.
Well, but it's becoming a very saturated market.
Yeah, and when they start pulling like obscure titles out of their ass, it gets a little bit crazy. I'm wondering about this Avengers movie and also the DC version.
JLA.
Yeah, that the budgets on those are going to be massive.
Yeah, well, and I think we really got to see what's going to happen with the Watchmen as well too, right? Like, if as much money as Warner Brothers has dumped into it and as big a headache as it's been, if it doesn't perform, I think it's going to be a big downer for the superhero movies.
Plus they've also recast Don Cheadle as Rhodey in Iron Man 2 as opposed to Terrence Howard.
Yeah.
I think that might have been a wrong move on their part.
Man,
I like Don Cheadle as an actor, but I think Terrence Howard fits the part visually more.
Yeah, but you got somebody like me who's never cracked open an Iron Man comic, and it really don't matter.
Yeah.
So, and there's a lot more of me than there are of you.
I don't know. I'm pretty big. as you've heard me mention many times on the show, there are a lot of British actors playing Americans in the shows that I watch. Now, I did a little research here today, and I looked through all the shows that I currently watch and found out some quite amazing things.
If you're going to do this as a list, fucking run through it like a sprinter, man, because we're going to be here all day.
Okay, I'm not gonna go for the whole thing, but just a couple highlights. Yvonne Strahovski, who plays Sarah Walker on Chuck, she's Australian. I had no friggin' clue. Doesn't quite meet the Brit requirement, but, you know, close. They have an accent. Like Johnny Lee Miller, we've already said, on Eli Stone, who's born in England. And it's kind of funny that Eli's boss, Jordan Weathersby, is played by Victor Garber, who's Canadian, and his ex-fiancée, Taylor Weathersby, is played by Natasha Henstridge, and she's also Canadian.
How foreign is that?
I know, weird, eh? The entire cast, or the entire main cast of Sanctuary, aren't even American. They're mostly Canadian, and Amanda Tapping, who was on Stargate, while raised in Canada, was actually born in Rockford, Essex, England. Doesn't really count for this list because she's playing a British woman anyway. So
yeah, I think you're really stretching. I mean, a Canadian doing an American accent? Oh, yeah, yay. That's a stretch.
Hey, okay. A show that we both watch, True Blood. Three of the main characters, Anna Paquin, who plays like Sookie Stackhouse, Ryan Quanten, who plays Jason Stackhouse, and Stephen Moyer, who plays Bill Compton, Well, Anna was born in Winnipeg.
Well, again,
Ryan.
Canadian, not a.
Okay. Ryan was born in Sydney, Australia, and Stephen Moyer was born in Brentwood, Essex, England. And they're both, or both, they're all three of them like Southern Louisiana kind of style accents, and I like that. And another famous one is Jamie Bamber plays Lee Apollo Adama on Battlestar Galactica. He was born in Hammersmith, London, England. But that also doesn't really count because he's a Caprican. He's not an American. And there's lots out there. And I know there's a lot of shows that I didn't even touch on, but yeah.
So, what is the whole meaning of here?
Well, I just think it's neat that there are so many
People that can do accents?
well, yeah, and passable accents. Like if you put an American actor in a British role, how often do you go, wow, that accent did not work at all? Although
Well, Meryl Streep is famous for her accents. Mel Gibson's Australian, and he's always doing an American accent.
Actually he's American. He was born in America.
Yeah, but when you see him interviewed,
He
he's a little bit
grew up
more
in
Australian.
Australia, but even going back to, say, The Nanny, the TV show, The Butler.
But friend, okay, if you're going to tell me friend Drescher is fucking like French, you'll impress me. But otherwise,
No, but The Butler, he isn't British.
I think what I do think is most interesting about all of this is that with the enormous pool of American actors that they don't choose within, they don't always choose in within the pool kind of thing, right? That they're constantly looking outside for, I don't know what. I mean, you look at these people, I mean, they're all pretty people, but not necessarily remarkable that, a lot of these roles and stuff like that, you could pretty much plug anybody in, or anybody could come in and sort of make that role their own, but different. So, it's just casting. Some people are good at accents, some aren't. Kevin Costner, Robin Hood, not so good, but Meryl Streep, and Baby Yoda Dingo, she nails it. The trailer for Clint Eastwood's new movie, Gran Torino, was just released, hot on the heels of The Changeling. We posted the trailer up on our site. You can check it out at hermaphobia.blogspot.com. Now, when I heard about Clint Eastwood's new movie, I thought, wow, he's actually going to make a popcorn film again, which would be his first since like 2002's Blood Work. Then I heard that he was going to be directing it. I'm like, what? He's only been doing Oscar bait. The last popcorn movie he directed was, well, Blood Work in 2002. And then I saw the trailer, and it's Oscar bait. Gran Torino is like the second chunk of Oscar chum that Eastwood has thrown out this year after The Changeling. And Eastwood actually tried this tack back in 2006 with Flags of Our Father and Letters from Iwo Jima. After decades of TV westerns like Rawhide and The Man with No Name, Dirty Harry and Fido Beto, and clunkers like Breezy and Pink Cadillac, you'd think that Eastwood in his twilight year, do you think that Clint Eastwood in his twilight years considers himself above making a movie that is simply entertaining?
I don't know, like that is like when I saw the trailer for Gran Torino, I was like, wow, this looks nice. I hope it's going to be just like it's being advertised, but I'm betting it's not going to be. It's going to be that whole.
Well, I really think I see a bit of a bait and switch happening, kind of like what happened with Million Dollar Baby. You thought you were going in for a boxing movie, and it turned out to be something completely different, which I wouldn't dare ruin for anybody who hasn't seen it.
Aliens. It's all aliens in that
Yeah,
movie.
you bastard. But I think it's going to be a movie about, not the family you have, but the family you choose.
Yeah.
I really think that's going to be the takeaway from this.
And he, I don't know, he seems to have lost his ability to act. He seems to be the
Oh,
same
dude,
character, I know.
he's been Clint Eastwood in every movie that he has done since he was Dirty Harry. I mean,
Yeah.
he's basically adapted Dirty Harry into every character that he's played thus far.
He's just becoming a skull with skin stretched over it.
Well, though. he's like Jack Nicholson. I mean, his persona is bigger than anything else. He can't step into a role and you have you forget that he is Clint Eastwood. Mm-hmm. Just as Jack Nicholson, no matter who it is that he plays, no matter what movie he's in, he is Jack Nicholson first.
Yeah. Although I really, really, really liked him in The Unforgiven. That was just a brilliant role.
Yeah, but I mean, it was sort of a modified Man with No Name. He was very serious, very quiet, very stoic. Now, with him doing all of these, you know, very Oscar-orientated films and everything, do you think that he's sort of turning his back on a fan base that has looked at him as, you know, this heroic icon? And, you know, is he trading off that for, you know, the Oscar that he obviously wants so bad?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm probably still going to watch it because I rather liked the trailer for it. But I don't know. Like, why would you change everything you are just to try to get a little statue that doesn't really mean a lot in the grand scheme of things?
Well, but within his community, it does, right? I think it's the prestige and everything else that has probably been fairly... Well, it was definitely elusive in the beginning of his career.
Do you mean where he was, like, singing in that one Western?
Paint Your White... Well, see, that's just it. Like, that's... Like, my dad loves that movie, and my dad is not a musical kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he loves the fucking Man with No Name movies. He loves the Dirty Harry movies. Clint Eastwood, and to his generation, Clint Eastwood was who they aspired to be. Like, you know,
he's a man's man.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think he's really kind of thrown that segment of his fan base away to
these, like, heartfelt characters that are gruff to start with, but then have this little epiphany, and now they're all emotional.
Well, but I think that he's throwing that fan base away for the respect of his peers kind of thing, right? Which is understandable. But if you're pumping out two movies a year, why not make one for your fans and one for yourself?
Yeah.
But I do think that he should be commended. I mean, he has elevated his stature as a filmmaker as he's gotten older, which generally works the other way for most older entertainers. It's usually a decline. Look at Orson Welles and how much respect and clout he had when he was making stuff like Citizen Kane.
Oh yeah, like right out of the gate.
Yeah,
he was, and then he just started going.
Well, he had a lot of bad luck, but by the end of his career, he was doing Butterfly, and the voice in the Transformers movie. Look at Burt Reynolds. You know, every now and then he steps up and he throws out a really good performance, like he did in Boogie Nights, but then he goes and he does Driven, which I love, but let's face it, it's not a career high point for him by any stretch of the imagination.
Also, Striptease as that senator.
That was fucking funny, though.
He did a fantastic job. Yeah,
he was great, exactly. You know, so, I mean, he's having a really uneven time. And you go back to the early to mid-70s, and those guys were pretty much...
Kings of the box office. Yeah. Well, look at even Mickey Rourke, who was on Graham Norton this week. He had like a really rough go for a while now he's
squirrelier than fuck. He's fucking okay. And did you see him on Graham Norton when he's fucking hitting on Jessica Biel? It was like, pathetic.
Dude, she is way out of your league.
Oh, and then some. And then some. And also this weekend, you can see it at hermaphobia.blogspot.com as well, is the new Underworld trailer. Which what did you think of it? Or what do you think of the franchise in general thus far?
The first movie was awesome. Second movie,
See, I thought the first one was awesome, and I thought the trailer for the second one before it came out looked like shit. I was like, oh fuck, they're chucking it. But the movie itself turned out to be fucking awesome. I loved it.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe we'll have to watch it again. I don't know. The trailer for this one, I like how they got back a lot of the same actors.
Yeah, Lucian is played by, his nut?
Whatever his head is there.
Michael, oh, it's got a freaking name that sounds like somebody else's name. But and this is guy too, like, I mean, he doesn't have to be doing fucking threequels to fucking horror films. He's doing movies like The Queen, playing Tony Blair and The Deal and stuff like that. Like, he's, you know, he's a respected actor kind of thing. I love that Rhona Mitra's in it a lot.
Yeah, I like her.
Oh, love her. And they're going back and telling the story of
So pretty.
how the Lycans revolted, rather than try and, you know, squeeze another story out of the current timeline.
Michael Sheen is the name he
Michael
goes for.
Sheen, yeah, he's yeah, I was sounds like
And
he could be related to one of Martin's sons.
yeah, I like how Bill Nighy is back as well. And like
As
reprising
Victor.
his role as Victor,
Yeah.
which is great. I am looking forward to watching the backstory, which is kind of like what they're thinking about doing with the thing, you know, the backstory. That'd
Yeah.
be great.
Yeah. No, I'm really looking forward to it. I think the trailer looks great. I think Rhona Mitra is going to fit in there fucking just perfect. And I'm excited.
Where have all the music videos gone on the music video stations? I used to enjoy flipping the TV over to Much Music or Much More Music, which are two of Canada's music video stations, and just listening to the music while I was at work. Every so often, when a song or video came on that I liked, I'd stop and I'd watch the video. If I liked the artist enough, I'd actually go out and I'd buy the CD, you know? Now, when you change the music channels, you're more likely than not to find Flava Flav trying to get laid or other reality-based shows. Yeah, reality. Yeah, like Flava Flav is living in reality there. Yeah. Very loosely based in the music industry world as well. Like people trying to get into a band or getting your ride pimped. And I'm all for that show, Pimp My Ride, but it doesn't belong on the music channel. It belongs on, say, like Discovery or one of the little handyman channels, you know? I don't know. After taking a quick check of the weekly programming for Much Music, I found that these types of shows take up over 80% of the day with almost complete coverage during daylight hours. Seems the only times you can pretty much be assured to find actual music videos being played is in the middle of the night. Never having watched OC or Party of Five,
Yeah, right.
I shut your hole. I never have. Unlike you, who own all the seasons on DVDs.
Oh yeah. My
I
walls are
kid.
lined with
I
Party of
kid. I
Five.
kid. How do these shows qualify to be on a channel that is supposed to be promoting music? Is there a lot of singing going on in these shows? Are they part of a band like the Partridge Family? I don't think so. One of my coworkers said that, well, they have theme songs, right? Well, I guess that's so, you know. I know that the conditions are similar in the States, like with MTV being, well, actually all of our shows that we get are pretty much pulled from MTV. Could this also be contributing to the declining CD sales? Because people aren't, if you're not getting your product seen by the people with disposable income, it's going to be harder to sell. Was this purely an economic tangent, or were the big labels just not putting enough green to play their videos 24/7 anymore? Or was it a way to boost profits by purchasing lower cost, already canceled shows while still raking in the cheddar from big music? Or does somebody actually believe that people want to watch all these Survivor knockoffs hour after hour? Because that's what started this trend, is Survivor. How popular that was.
Well, you can't completely blame everything on Survivor.
Well, no, I don't
I
like
love me some Survivor.
I watched the first two seasons of Survivor like religiously. But
But I mean, to go back to your bigger question, you know, what happened to everything? Well, I know down in the States, what happened was they splintered. You had MTV, which was doing the first run stuff and playing, you know, the silly little, you know, if they'd play Footloose or Flash Dance and stuff like that. And then you had MTV2, which was playing the music videos. Up here, they splintered. We have Much Music and then Much More Music, which was supposed to be sort of the MTV VH1 parallel.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, there's a lot of programming that's taken over all the music on the music station channels. I don't know what happened. Like, it doesn't really make any sense. I mean, economically, what could be cheaper than playing videos that somebody else has produced, packaged, everything else,
and is they hand it over to show you?
No, I don't think that they did. I don't know. I don't think that they could pay them to show them, because that would be payola. And if the more money that you're getting, the more airtime you're getting, kind of thing, right? And it sort of worked the other way around. MTV started out very much like radio, where a video would get hot, and then in turn the music sales would bolster. And then, you know, the music videos that were playing on MTV and the sales charts reflected one another.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it was very much a very, what do you call it, a symbiotic relationship. So, yeah, so then, you know, MTV started sticking their toes in the water and producing a few shows. Colin Quinn, is that his name? The comedian dude. I know that he had a show early on, stuff like that. And they were reality-based shows, very loosely within the music realm and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, it has gotten to the point, but I mean, like I said, you know, if you've got these studios giving you shit to play on your channel, and I mean, a ton of it, I mean, they fill 24 hours with music. Why are you now taking the money that you've made from, because you get to charge for commercials to put in between those videos.
Mm-hmm.
So now why are you taking that money and turning around and creating programming that has nothing to do with music? I mean, I know that they've, I think that they, I don't know that, but I think they have completely driven our generation away from much music and MTV.
Which is sad, because I still like watching music videos, if I could find them.
Yeah. Well, you can on the internet now.
Yeah.
And it, that's really kind of the way that it's gone is... I can't wrap my head around why you would spend money on programming that is very hit and miss, like you said, you know, Flava of Love and
Making the Band.
Oh, what's the
So You Think You Can Dance,
Marrying a Brady, and you know, all that kind of shit. Like, you know, it's ridiculous. I mean, it is calling it entertainment is a very, very, very loose use of the word.
Yeah, it's lowest common denominator stuff there. It's
which, I mean, I totally own the fact that, you know, give me a little surreal life and woo, I'm all over it kind of thing, right? But I mean, it has, and as low as that is, it has degenerated further with Flava of Love and the lead singer of Poison, Brett Michaels. I mean, you've got these washed up former famous people that are basically trying to get their dicks wet in a half hour format. And
I love you, Flava Flav.
It's embarrassing for everybody involved, but yeah,
it's a car wreck. And I will have to admit that I watched the first season of Flava of Love when I was at work with one of my coworkers, because we were just so in awe that this kind of shit was being put on TV.
Well, and, you know, as far as, you know, replaying the OCs and Party of Five and stuff like that, well, I guess it's keeping that certain demographic on your channel kind of thing, right?
Yeah, that and I do understand, too, that they probably had, like, a very large soundtrack built into the shows.
Well, that's why.
But then they're not going to be on the friggin' DVDs, because they're not going to be able to get the like licensing agreements.
Well, it takes a long time. That's what that's what kept 90210 off of DVD for so long, was getting the music rights. And then I think they actually ended up having to substitute some of the music. But yeah, I mean, there's that aspect of it. But when you're talking about kids and music, you have a very small window. Like, the stuff that's on 90210 from, you know, 10 years ago does not hold up now.
No.
Story-wise, music-wise, everything else, it's something that it has a very short shelf life. So, it's their business. Let them run it. We got the internet. We can find what it is that we're looking for.
Except that's just it. We're doing searches for videos that we want to see. How about the videos that we don't know that we want to see yet?
Then go to places like iMeme, which will give you suggestions based on what it is that you've watched. I discovered iMeme this week, and let me tell you, I'm fucking waving the banner. I love it. Like I signed up for it ages ago, and it was kind of like that. There wasn't that much on it. Now it's there's oh, there's tons of stuff. I've been having such a good time.
I did find a version of the Bare Naked Ladies cover of "I'm in Love with a McDonald's Girl." They're playing in Buffalo, New York for this one. It's not as good as the original that I remember of it, but still, that song is hard to find.
Oh man, I've seen there's that Kate Bush video that I showed you
Yeah,
that I'd never seen that video for.
and you are a massive Kate Bush fan.
And then oh, there's this horrifying Bonnie Tyler video for "Here She Comes," which is like one of my favorite songs, and it was always played to clips of Metropolis because that's what the song was recorded for. But oh, this is oh, it's so bad, it's so bad, but I love it.
Yes, I mean the repository for both good and evil.
Russell Crowe set to play a werewolf in a new movie directed by Ridley Scott. Scott has landed a script written by horror scribe Ian Jeffers and is planning to take it to the big screen, starring Crowe. Okay. Gladiator through the roof. I get it. They worked really well together once. Since then, they have done Body of Lies and oh, what was that stupid winemaking movie?
I have no idea.
That's just it. That's just it. Ridley Scott, the Ridley Scott, one of the greatest filmmakers alive and working today, has made two successive flops starring.
Russell Crowe.
So I get that he's in the middle of making some fucking Robin Hood movie with.
Russell Crowe
So why
playing
not?
two parts in it, no less.
Exactly, because you just can't get enough Crow. So why not wait and see if the third time's a charm there? And even if it is, do you really want to tempt fate like that again?
know. I think Russell Crowe, I think hit his peak with Gladiator. Like, I really enjoyed that movie, and I enjoyed his earlier work. But I can't think of anything that he's been in since then that has really piqued my interest.
Yeah, he's been into fucking Ridley Scott films that tanked. Like I like Russell Crowe, and I don't know, is there a little love happening there or what? But I just
Remember him in LA Confidential?
L.A. Confidential, Proof, The Sum of Us, Quick and the Dead. I mean, he was great. Virtuosity. There's a lot of really good Russell Crowe stuff out there. The Insider, the Michael Mann
Oh
film.
yeah, that was brilliant.
I am not trying to sling any arrows at Crowe. I'm just saying that these two are not good for each other.
And what's that band that he's got? 30 odd foot of grunt or something?
I don't know.
Oh, wait, yeah, he was in, sorry, 310 to Yuma. I didn't mind that with Christian Bale. He's also in American Gangster.
Oh yeah, which was good. Oh no, that was Ridley Scott too, wasn't it? No.
No.
American Gangster. Yes, it was Ridley Scott.
was it?
Yes, it was. Okay, my bad. Okay, he's. Oh my God, like, are they like fucking joined at the hip now or something? But no, American Gangster was good. Okay, that completely slipped my mind. I mean, it was a good movie. It wasn't a great film. It wasn't a memorable Scott film by any stretch of the
Were you
imagination.
thinking of a good year?
Yes. Oh. I mean, like
Yeah.
I who tries to watch everything that Ridley Scott makes, even if I don't appreciate it, I at least want to see it. Have like I won't see it. I just won't see it.
Yeah, looking on the IMDb at Crowe's filmography here, okay, there have been a couple things that have stood out since Gladiator, like Proof of Life. I haven't seen it yet.
It's not bad.
A Beautiful Mind was up for the Oscar and that.
Yeah, again, not
I
bad.
again, yeah, something that just did not interest me. I didn't watch it. And Master and Commander,
Not interested.
it was okay, an amazing okay. Cinderella Man.
Not interested.
See, I didn't mind. I went to go see this with Big Mike, and I didn't mind it, but it obviously did not strike enough of a chord with me to remember it past Gladiator
Yeah.
until now, you know.
No, I mean he's done a lot of unremarkable work, and it's sad that the two of them are doing it together. You
Yeah.
know, I mean there are some teams that get together and, you know, Seth Rogen and
Judd Apatow.
Judd Apatow, you know, they work well together. There's George Clooney and Steven Soderbergh. You know, there are very successful actor director teams. Russell Crowe and Ridley Scott are not one of them. And somebody needs to tell Ridley Scott and Russell Crowe that they are not one of them. Last night, Mark, myself, and a friend of ours, John, was over, and we had a little mini Paul Verhoeven
Marathon.
triple feature, as it were. We watched The Fourth Man, RoboCop, and Showgirls. Fourth Man is one of my favorite films. I love this movie, and I have never had a friend who's seen it. Simply, I think as much as anything else, because people got to read it, and it's a bit of a turn off. Plus, I mean, subject matter and stuff like that. And some of my friends are a little bit more in the middle of the road,
Yeah,
and
give us an action movie or give us nothing else.
yeah, and so it was a blast last night. I mean, I had a great time. I mean, how can you not enjoy watching RoboCop again? And I don't care what anybody fucking says, Showgirls is the shit. I fucking love that movie. But tell me what you thought of the three. Start with The Fourth Man.
The Fourth Man. I am one of those people that really enjoy watching a movie with subtitles because I read fast, and I get the image and I get the feeling of the movie by like reading it. I enjoyed it, and just all the foreshadowing, it was great. I did see a lot more of Jerome Crabb than I ever thought I would. Full frontal. But yeah, I liked it a lot. It was I knew kind of where it was going, but it was still kind of suspenseful at times.
Yeah, and it didn't. It's very of its time. I believe it came out in 1980, and it's a Dutch film, so it's not. It was made in a time and made in a place where, you know, you didn't have to have this big ending that, you know, just summed everything up and everything was spelled out for you, and you know that the movie reached this crescendo and then fades to black kind of thing. There's a bit of a coda after the climax, and it's so cool and it's so rich visually. Like, there's so much happening on the screen. You have to pay attention. I mean, the second time you watch The Fourth Man is the best time, because that's when you start,
Oh, look at that. There it
oh,
is.
because that's okay. You know, you see everything then, and
Well, it's
it's
like I was able to point out to John, say, hey, that's the woman from the train.
yeah.
So yeah, and they kept on showing up the same characters over and over
Well, even
again.
that scene on the train, there's that picture of Samson and Delilah,
Yeah.
which comes into play later when she's cutting his hair and
Yeah.
other. And it just it it is it's just it's an amazing film. When people talk shit about Paul Verhoeven, and you know that he's a bit of a hack and everything else, I always say go back to The Fourth Man, go back to his early Dutch films, but The Fourth Man especially. The Fourth Man is just it's fucking brilliant, and I think probably his next best film that we watched last night, in his canon, is RoboCop.
Oh, yes. I remember going to go see this in the theater, and yeah, I was blown away. It was fantastic. It was a perfect blend of like action and over-the-top sequences and the European look at American culture. It was just, I loved it.
And satire. I mean, the movie is just dripping with satire. Like it, you know, it's not just an observation of American culture. It is
a condemnation of it.
No, it's more of a roast of it.
Yeah,
you know,
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Exactly. You know, and I mean, like, it came out in what, 87?
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, that was a time where we didn't really hear a lot of, you know, sort of the privatization of the military and you know, sort of how that sort of, and in RoboCop that expands. Oh. As much as we didn't hear about it, it expands into the police force.
Yeah, and what a visionary movie, exactly, too.
You know?
Like, all the stuff, like the CD that they're putting into there to play a video. Like, DVDs didn't come out for another 10 years after that.
Yeah. But, you know, but I mean, things like Blackwater now are so commonplace, whereas, I mean, that was very much what OPC was doing in RoboCop, were coming in and being a privatized police force.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it you know, that's Verhoeven right there, you know, that he has this very expansive worldview, and he, and especially when you go into Showgirls, I mean, he loves to provoke.
Mm-hmm.
He's very much a provocateur, and he wants to shock you with the violence and the sex and everything else, and then he creeps all that other shit in underneath. Yeah. And that's what I love about the guy, is that he's going to keep everybody entertained. Yeah. You know, if all you want is to look at the pretty stuff and then the exploding stuff and the shiny stuff, then that's all you're going to see, and you're still going to have a good time.
Like,
and if you want to come in and get a little bit of subtext, then you're going to have a good time too.
Oh, Foreman. What's his name?
Oh, Kurtwood Smith.
Kurtwood Smith in RoboCop has what I think is one of the best lines. That's, "Bitches, out!" When he busts into Miguel Ferrar's house there. And ask the prostitutes to get out. Oh, man, it was just brilliant. Do you want to Showgirls now?
Oh, Showgirls. There's not a lot to say about Showgirls. But but please give me your...
Well, I was thinking about it again last night as I was lying in bed. And I know that Shannon Elizabeth...
Elizabeth Berkley.
Well, that's what I said. Elizabeth Berkley. Elizabeth something or other. I don't know if I see anybody else in that role, but everybody else in their own respective roles were perfectly fit.
Yeah.
Everybody didn't do any over-the-top acting or any of that. She did. Well, Gina Gershon did a really good job.
Oh, Gina Gershon
as Crystal.
You know, Gina Gershon is Gina Gershon. She is pretty much perfection personified.
And what was that line by Robert Davi? Oh,
it must be nice not having people come on you. Now, that is the best line in the fucking movie. I love Showgirls. I love the big trashy mess that it is. And there is no subtext in Showgirls except maybe how much Joe Esterhaas hates women.
Yeah.
Which I am not in any way, shape, or form promoting or what's the other word? Approving of any way.
Yeah.
It just is what it is. Showgirls is not a flattering depiction of women, but still, it's this big trashy mess that is pretty and fun, and you can laugh your ass off and have a great time with it.
And you still get to see women kicking the shit out of people.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was fun.
It's engaging, you know. It. Say what you will about Showgirls, it is entertaining.
And you get to see a lot of boobies.
Well, there's that, I guess.
Woo, boobies. Yeah.
But I mean, Verhoeven is great. I mean, like, you know, Flesh and Blood, That was his first American film, and it's awesome. I mean, it's a great, another sex and violence spectacle with Rutger Hauer and Jennifer Jason Leigh. If you go back to his earlier Dutch films, Spetters.
Again with Rutger Hauer.
A great movie, Soldier of Orange. I wasn't crazy about Katie's Passion or Turkish Delight, but... and then Total Recall. Basic Instinct. I love Basic Instinct. I love Basic Instinct. Starship Troopers. Starship Troopers and RoboCop have so much in common.
We should have fit that one in there last night somehow.
Yeah.
Because I recently just rewatched all three of the Starship
Troopers. No, don't try and fucking piggyback those sequels onto it.
That's just it. The first one was far and away superior to anything that came after it. Starship Troopers was awesome. Yeah.
And I mean, really, like, I still haven't seen Black Book. I'm dying to watch it. I've got to check it out. I've got it. It's been sitting on my shelf forever. Just haven't got a chance to watch it. But I'm dying to see that. And apparently it's supposed to be a real true return to form, like back to his Dutch glory days. So I really want to see that. But probably the one American film that he's made that I would say is a little bit on the garbagey side, and it pains me to say it because my boyfriend Josh Brolin is in it, is The Hollow Man. I don't think The Hollow Man is a horrible movie. I just don't think that it's not the brilliant failure that Showgirls is. It's just a mediocre failure.
Yeah, I found Hollow Man mildly entertaining. I didn't turn it off.
Yeah.
When I was watching it.
Yeah. And
I not a very good use of Kevin Bacon. I found he didn't really do much for the movie. But
it was sort
better
of
than me.
But it was a thankless role too, right? I mean, like, he was, even when he was a good guy, he wasn't a nice guy.
Yeah.
So he was a character that you weren't going to have a whole lot of compassion for. You know, Elizabeth Shue, he had that weird relationship with her. And it was just one of those movies that, I mean, you had these characters that you really couldn't get too invested in. So they end up killing each other. Big whoop.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we spent the night with Paul Verhoeven and we're better for the experience. At least I am.
Yeah, and it was good having John over. He hasn't been for a while.
Yeah, he's great, and he actually works in the film industry too. So it's lucky cool.
Bastard.
It's cool to have that sort of insider perspective on everything as well too. So that's all we got for stories. So I guess that throws us into our segments. First up being the earworms of the week. They're those little songs that get stuck in your head and you just can't get them out of there.
Yeah.
And so what's been rattling around in your head this week there, sir?
Well, at the beginning of the week, I accidentally re-listened to Wuthering Heights. No. And it was stuck in there for a day, but it got out of there. So I was kind of happy. But I ended up watching all of season 3 of Weeds. And... tiny boxes.
Little boxes.
Yeah, little boxes. Sorry, yeah, it's...
little boxes on the hillside. Little boxes made of ticky-tacky. Little boxes on the hillside. Little boxes all the same. There's a pink one and a green one and a blue one and a yellow one and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same. And the people in the houses all went to the university where they were put in boxes and they came out all the same. And there's doctors and lawyers and business executives and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same.
And I liked how in season 3 it was being sung by a different artist every episode.
That started in season 2, actually.
When we were watching it on the
DVDs I pop there. Past the credits all the time.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah, No, season two, they had, I think it was Elvis Costello opened the season, and then they had a bunch of indie bands doing it, and then season three opened with Randy Newman doing it, and then a bunch
of indies. I didn't like his version at all.
Yeah. And then, yes, when you get to season four, the theme song's gone, because... As you'll see.
Okay. I did like the hip hop kind of version of it.
There's some interesting versions. I can't say, like, I love the original. I think
season three ended with the original singer singing it. As did
season two, yeah.
And I found season three to be kind of a little bit of a series finale for me, so I'm okay. I don't have to watch season four right away.
Well, but, yeah, I think you kind of have to, because we're going to have to.
So we can start talking about it.
We're going to have to talk about it. Yeah, we did season one and two last week. And
the week before.
Yeah.
Season three was this last week.
Right. Which I guess we can throw in here right now, too, that there won't be a TV episode this week. Just because...
There wasn't a hell of a lot on.
Yeah, and the stuff that is on has been a little less than stellar. So, not that there isn't some good stuff happening. Boston Legal and Dexter are rocking out, but everything else is kind of sad. But we're talking earworms here.
Yeah, so you know my earworm. So what was your earworm this week, sir?
All week up until today, it was actually the song that we opened with last week, which was Cyndi Lauper's Into the Nightlife. And that's been jiving in my head all week, but it got trumped today in a big way.
And you don't even have to tell me what it is.
Okay, so you tell me what you think it is.
I think it's Men Without Hats.
Yeah. Yeah. Where Do the Boys Go?
We walked around in circles singing. Oh, I said we'd walk around for practically forever singing. Oh,
every now and then, you know what? That is a song. It gets in my head, and I will play it ad nauseum for days on end, and I just walk around in circles until I get it out of my system, and then I can't listen to it forever, because the next time I do, I'll be obsessed with it again. I love that song.
That version that you were playing today there, that was kind of poppy.
I found it on iMeme, and that's, you know, I accidentally ran into it on iMeme. That's where that insidious little fucking earworm got into my head.
that was kind of like my Wuthering Heights there. This at the beginning of this week, that was so close.
Yeah, but yeah, so yeah, Men Without Hats. Where do the boys go? I love it.
Alrighty. If you guys have any earworms, please let us know, and we will soundly mock you.
and take your best shots at us. And finally, we have our DVD picks of the week. And yours, sir.
Well, we were previously talking about Ridley Scott, and as everybody knows, he has a brother named Tony, who is also a fantastic director. My pick this week is Man on Fire.
Ah, great movie.
With Denzel Washington and Dakota Fanning. And
is Mickey Rourke in that? Why am I thinking Mickey Rourke is in that movie?
I don't know, because you're crazy.
It could be. Yes, I was right. Mickey Rourke, he plays Jordan.
Brilliant acting by just about everybody in here.
Oh, man. Denzel Washington, man, he kicks the shit out of that. Oh.
Yes. By far, Denzel's best role to date, in my opinion. For a while there, he seemed to be doing, like, he was just recycling the same character over and over again. He stepped out of it when he did Training Day. And this one here as Creasy, phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah, I have this on DVD as well. I've got the 2-disc special edition steel box.
Oh, la-dee-da. I just have the regular old widescreen version I got today when we accidentally stopped at the video store. And I happened to buy 12 more movies. I've been so good. I mean, for weeks, I haven't spent $1 on DVDs. Today, I dropped about $120.
Tisk, tisk, tisk.
But, Man on Fire follows Denzel Washington as a bodyguard for Dakota Fanning, who's the daughter of, like a rich guy and his wife. And she gets kidnapped. And it's him getting her back. And if you have not watched this yet, you are in for a treat. It is so well done. And Tony Scott's editing and
his visual style. It's just amazing.
Beautiful.
You know, it's a very engaging story and amazingly acted. And the cherry on the cake of it is this brilliant visual style that Scott brings to the table. A little hyperactive for some people, I know, but I think it's that whole Oliver Stone kind of employed it a little bit with Natural Born Killers, and I mean Scott's done it. Some say excessively in Domino.
I found Domino a bit excessive in that style, but
I love me some Domino.
I did enjoy it in Man on Fire.
Yeah.
So, again, go watch it. You will not be disappointed. And your movie, sir?
This week I am picking, because it's election week, I decided I would go with Primary Colors, the thinly veiled story of the ascent to the White House of Clinton.
Bill Clinton.
Bill and Hillary Clinton, yes.
Billary.
Billary Clinton. if they would have hooked up in this time in history, they would be called Billary.
Yes.
You know, you got your Brad Jelinas and all that sort of stuff. It'd be Billary.
Your Bennifers.
Yes.
And they go out of their way to try to combine names, and it just does not work.
But the movie stars John Travolta, Emma Thompson, Billy Bob Thornton, Kathy Bates, Adrian Lester, who's callback to Doomsday. He was in that. Maura Tinnery, Larry Hagman, Diane Ladd. It's an amazing cast. Allison Janney's in there, Rob Reiner, Robert Klein. The list goes on and on. It was directed by, Mike Nichols. And it is so funny and so on the nose a lot of the time, but not in a bad way. Travolta is so funny. In the Clinton role, he has the voice down, and of course all the names are changed to protect the innocent. but we know who this is about, and if you haven't seen it, check it out. everybody that participates in the movie, I think, has very publicly demonstrated their roots with the Democratic Party. And yet the movie's not that flattering. So yeah, it just kind of pulls a lot of the masks off, and it's and but does it in a really funny way. It's a cool movie.
Yeah, and everybody liked Clinton. I'm sure that if he was allowed to run again, he wouldn't have had a problem at all getting back in.
No.
His wife obviously did not have the same shot at it, which is kind of too bad too, I'm thinking. But we'll find out on Tuesday or
Yeah.
Wednesday or whenever the court decides he won.
That is sadly too true. So those were our picks for DVDs this week, but hidden in the video store is the Get Smart. It's coming out in a few different editions, a widescreen, a full screen, and a special edition, two disc special edition. Also is Kung Fu Panda, which is coming out in a few different iterations.
I enjoyed that movie. It
I still
was
haven't seen it,
funny.
so still have not seen it. I'll have to check it out when it comes out on Tuesday. Kiss of the Spider-Man is coming.
Spider Woman.
Spider-Woman.
Kiss of the Spider
It's the Kirsten Dunst story.
Man. Spider Man.
Kiss of the Spider-Woman is coming out in a two-disc collector's edition. This was a mid-80s flick with William Hurt and Raul Julia as two prisoners in some third-world country kind of thing. Got both actors nominated for Academy Awards, and it is a really great film. This is, I believe, its first time on DVD, which is the significance of the of bringing it up, and I'm actually looking forward to seeing it again.
Yeah, and for those of you who might comment on my Spider-Man theme song, that was from Family Guy when Peter
Dude,
was. Anyways.
if you're gonna do hip cultural references, to do it just takes the hipness away, so.
Well, okay then.
Also coming out on Tuesday is Return to Sleepaway Camp. The I guess they're resuscitating the franchise for the direct-to-video market.
I remember the first I remember Sleepaway Camp, and I thought it was kind of funny.
It was great. Death by Curling Iron to the Vag.
I was just about to say that.
Just in time for Christmas once again, because Halloween's over, Thanksgiving's not quite here. We gotta talk Christmas. It's Christmas release of Star Wars. We've got a prequel trilogy, as well as the Star Wars original trilogy. So there's two different packages coming out. And did you want to make any comments about how Lucas continues to rape the Star Wars fans?
No, I think we've pretty much made that abundantly clear how we feel about that.
Okay. Waterworld is coming out in an extended edition.
Ooh.
Yes.
I was one of the fanboys that actually enjoyed that movie.
You know what? It's not. It's like I think we talked about that, about how much it's actually made versus
How much it costs.
what it's perceived to have lost and everything.
Yeah.
But it's not a bad movie. It says here that it is going to. One of the most talked about movies in film history is now available in two versions: an extended cut with over 40 minutes of additional footage, and the
Wow.
original theatrical cut, both digitally remastered for optimum picture quality.
40 extra minutes?
4-0.
That's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
If they could do something like that with Kevin Costner's other post-apocalyptic epic, The Postman, I'd enjoy that.
Even the Postman. Also coming out on Tuesday is the Criterion Collection of Woman Under the Influence, the old I'm gonna blank on his name. It stars Jenna Rollins. She is the woman under the influence, and it was directed by her late husband John Cassavetes. Never seen it, always wanted to. This may be the opportunity. And also we have another just in time for Christmas repackaged. Let's rape you for the holidays, the Bourne trilogy.
Just in case you haven't bought them all before.
There was a really nice trilogy that came out when the third one came out.
Yeah.
And I really wanted it and could not find it anywhere because they understock that shit. So I guess, you know, it is coming out. So anybody who didn't just get pissed off like me and just go buy the three films separately, you can...
like me.
Pick it up.
And I would recommend watching it. I know Quantum of Solace has already been compared to the Bourne... what's his first one again? Born Under My Skin. I don't know how it was. But it's already been compared to that, only a lesser version of it. The Bourne Ultimatum, the whole Bourne trilogy is fantastic. You've got to pick them up and watch them.
I've picked them up, but I just haven't watched them.
And you better get on the ball, mister.
I got to finish my Oceans movies first, man. also on Tuesday, season 4, Project Runway. Yeah, the ending was a bit of a disappointment, I'm just saying. And also on Tuesday, TV DVD is Reaper Season 1.
Season 1 or the complete series of? Because I haven't heard word 1 if there's going to be a second season. No, it's coming back. Really?
Yeah.
Man, I like the show.
There's a lot of shows that haven't come back yet that they're... The networks are embracing this. We don't have to have a structured season thing. Medium still hasn't come back, but it's coming back. There's several shows.
Okay, good, because I enjoyed Reaper when it was out, and such a fun little show.
Yeah. So that's it for upcoming DVDs, and that's pretty much it for us. Once again, we won't be doing any second editions this week. Keep an eye out. We may just fucking turf that idea altogether, or. Maybe wait for better things to come.
Yeah.
You can always email us at hermaphobia@gmail.com.
Or go to the blog at hermaphobia.blogspot.com.
Talk to us. Send us an email. Leave us a comment. And that's it. We're over. We're out.
Okay.
Have a great week.
Bye, bye, bye. Bye, boys, and bye.
My damn battery died in my mouth, so I gotta...